I'm calling you at a 416. Are you Toronto?
Yeah, I'm in Toronto right now.
Okay. Is that your place of primary residence or?
Yeah, I'm originally from Montreal.
Okay.
And I'm living in Toronto.
Great. Well, I think, where you're coming from is a probably good place to start from. Certainly because the film that you've put together is obviously not in Canada. We're going to Africa. Can you give me sort of a bit of a background as.
Yeah, I'm from Montreal.
Okay.
You're right, the film has very little to do with Canadian context.
Although there is some French in there.
Yeah, there is a fair amount of Quebecers that work in Mali, and there's a few projects in Mali that are run associated with Quebec. So the Francophone quality of Mali certainly is connected with Canada in that way.
Right.
Other than that, I would say it's very, very different.
Yeah. What sort of brought you to this project? Did you have sort of a film background to begin with? Is that your bio here says that you remove grout and you're a science journalist.
Well, I'm a filmmaker, and I do have a penchant for removing grout. That's another story. But I've been a science journalist for a few years, and while working at the Discovery Channel, I had an opportunity to go to Mali to deal with a story that I'd heard about a few years before and that I had found very interesting. It was about a group of prostitutes that had formed a theater group
Right.
in Bamako, the capital of Mali.
Right.
And I found it interesting because I realized that as prostitutes, their life was diametrically opposed to what we associate with theater groups. I mean, they would basically be plying their trade in the shadows, and it was not really well seen to be a prostitute, and it was, fundamentally a hidden or low-key activity. And here they were coming out in public, clearly, being much more aware of who they were politically as a, class consciousness or whatever you would call it, and aware of their role as prostitutes, and willing to own up to it and to come out and present these plays. So I
There's.
found that intriguing, and I knew that there was an interesting story there.
Yeah, it was very inspiring to watch. I had a chance last night to watch it, and just that I think I felt some connection to that idea of like, going past what you do and then presenting it and performing it. And there was at the beginning there was a woman talking about her apprehensions around doing such a thing. And yeah, so definitely a point of good story for sure. What was the link between the science stream that you were looking at and this particular project?
Well, there really isn't a link between science. There's a link to a certain extent between health issues and the story I'm looking at.
Right.
But basically, it's a social issue. I mean, you had these people who were subjected to a process, which is basically the epidemic of AIDS in Africa, and who went through a change in their consciousness because of coming face to face with such, intense obstacles. And you're right, they were very nervous at first. I mean, what happened was the genesis of the theater group was that there is a tendency in non-governmental organizations in West Africa to try to disseminate messages through theater, which they say works well with people who, don't read and so on. And it's sort of lively, and it also has a very strong roots in Malian culture, for example. Malian culture has a tradition of theater in the villages, especially at harvest time. And
Right.
so it's a kind of a way that has evolved for messages to be brought across.
Yeah, there are points there where that the power of the theater was definitely quite evident. I think there were points where, like a lot of these plays are being held, as you said, held in bars and sort of very local public context, but also right out in sort of a marketplace. Like, it almost looks like a street or a road, you know?
Yes, it was, totally in the public, like all ages, all members of society.
Yeah, and a lot
The evolution of that was that originally the idea was to disseminate information about AIDS and condom use to prostitutes.
Right.
And they designed their plays in to be taking place in the same bars that they would actually work in.
Right. With the prostitutes, particularly
exactly.
in mind, as an audience.
And customers,
yeah.
And so on.
So that was how it originated then, from what you gather, is that it originated just to present to other prostitutes sort of like some social education around better practices and sort of the issues that are coming out that are always in the dark but are coming out now and sort of being presented in an open way to discuss.
Yeah, that was the idea originally.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's still one of the things that they do.
Mm-hmm.
But as they did that for a couple of years, and as you mentioned earlier, they were really nervous at the beginning, and then
mm-hmm.
they really fell into it. And they
right.
would actually write the scenes. They'd write the dialogue and write the plays. So
mm-hmm.
there was all sorts of social satire in their,
right.
In their stories. And, you know, there's what I find really interesting about their stories is they do incorporate all this commentary on their society and all this subtle sort of dark humor and,
mm-hmm.
You know, kind of ribald take on the hypocrisies of their own society.
Right.
And then they moved on to start having plays in public places like marketplaces, and they even attended a few theater festivals in West Africa.
Mm-hmm.
For them, these are like generally illiterate women who are from the lower parts of society, and they're like, they were really, you know, excited to just be doing something else and doing something kind of cool, and they really got into it.
Right. Oh, yeah. You could definitely see that. There was one woman in particular who stands out. I think she wears sort of a turquoise dress for a lot of it, but like her role in the theater has definitely given her an out, an alternative. And you definitely see some life and some hope in her that, you know, amongst all of her friends who have died, she's, you know, found some other, and that's been really important to her. That story was really quite strong.
Yeah, I think it was a source of pride and, yeah.
Yeah. I wonder, too, if I might just ask, like, some of the choices that you made. From what I gather, were there two of you doing filming and editing, or...
Well, there was two of us shooting it, but I edited it on my own.
Okay. And the use of captions is definitely throughout, and there's very little, I don't know, there might be one point where we can hear an interviewer speak, but was that a choice beforehand made where you would just let what you're seeing happen, or were you, you know, in the editing process thinking that you would want to remove yourself from that film?
I didn't see myself as a... you know, as a central character,
mm-hmm.
being a white male.
Mm-hmm.
But in retrospect, I think it's a valid way to tell a story. I mean, one can tell a story from a personal perspective and have it reflected through one's eyes as an observer and reveal a lot. In this case, I didn't envisage myself as, you know, a big player in the story.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you can talk a bit about like what, how your relationship sort of established and worked its way through, because you are dealing with people and you are, you know, project like you're telling their story in essence, and that there's some relationship that exists there. Maybe you can give me a bit of what sort of relationship developed or didn't develop in that.
Well, it's interesting because when I went there, I mean, I was cognizant of the fact that I was, you know, this person was divided in probably every possible way, but it didn't bother me because I don't really see that as a challenge. It wasn't very difficult to get on a good footing with
mm-hmm.
These women, and
right.
you know, we hung out quite a bit. And
how long did it take?
It took a couple of months,
mm-hmm.
And it was a bit gradual, the actual, you know, warming up process. But I just basically refused to see it as an obstacle, and
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, it is what it is.
Right, right. And how long did the editing process take you?
It took a long time. It took about a year to come up with a second cut of that film. Yeah.
Right, and this was finished in 2003?
Yeah, that's right.
Right, and you would have started it in...
In 2000.
In 2000. Great, so it's quite a long process. That's quite intense, yeah. I don't think people always associate the amount of time and effort that might go into a film from beginning to end, you know, from that point of, like, I've got an idea to actually putting it out.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that.
Yeah. So what's your schedule been looking as far as this film, and where has it been taking you of late?
The film has been seen in Europe, in West Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's a film that is of interest, I think, to anybody who's, involved in with sex workers,
mm-hmm.
who's involved with AIDS awareness, who's interested in African context for these things, and who's also anyone who's interested in theater might find it interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I think it's of great interest for people who are curious on how people's creativity can come out even under adversity and
mm-hmm.
With very little resources.
Mm-hmm.
How it's a kind of a natural talent that seems to exist even under dark conditions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What was your relationship to Mali before you went? Had you gone before, or was this a...
I've been in West Africa before, and
right.
I've been in East Africa before, so
right.
I wasn't too surprised. I had never been to Mali before. I had been to Senegal,
mm-hmm.
Guinea-Bissau.
Right.
Mali is a special country, as anyone who's been there would agree.
Mm-hmm.
It's a country that has a lot of its culture intact, and it's been fortunate not to be ravaged by war like some of its neighbors.
Right.
So it actually, despite being very poor and very low on UN indexes of development, it still has a wealth of culture intact, and you can see that this works for people.
Mm-hmm.
In Mali.
Mm-hmm. Were there sort of interviews with? I mean, I see we see a bit at the beginning some of the men who frequent the services, I suppose, that are being offered. And was that also a choice to sort of kind of give a sort of a background for where these women are coming from?
Yes. You referred to the men. I mean, there are definitely choices that are being made, and one choice I made, which is kind of too bad, but it really didn't move the story forward, was a lot of footage dealing with one of the so-called pimps,
mm-hmm.
of one of these women, and he was really the opposite of a pimp as we know it. He was more or less he basically saw himself as the servant of
mm-hmm.
the prostitute. He lived with this Nigerian prostitute, and he was a refugee from Sierra Leone, and he was an artist, and he'd gone to art school or something to that effect, and he was this kind of skinny guy, and he hated fighting, and he was afraid of being hurt, and he was kind of being bossed around by his girlfriend, and he was like an anti-pimp. And we interviewed him extensively, but ultimately he did get cut out of the final
right.
film because of considerations of keeping the story going.
Mm-hmm. 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 Anyway, I should also mention, just by the way, I'm speaking with Bram Rosenzweig, and he is the director of Compelled to Act, and his film is going to be screened at the E-Bar on Saturday at 3 p.m. Have you been into Guelph before?
I've never been to Guelph.
Oh, well, we'll love to have you here. I guess we'll leave it at that.
Okay.
I appreciate you having some time to speak to us.
My pleasure.
And we look forward to having you here in Guelph on Saturday.
I look forward to it as well.
Great. Thanks so much, Bram.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.